And a new guest joins us with Catherine Austin Fitz, Debbie Landers. I'll tell you about her when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let me tell you about Debbie Landers, serving as founder and principal of the General Assembly Academy. And since 1996, she served as the executive director of the Tennessee Association of the Non-Public Academic Schools. Debbie's community activities include leadership foundations. And here she is with Catherine Austin Fitz. Hey, Debbie, how are you?
Wonderfully well. And you?
Good, good. Tell me now, what is the General Assembly Academy?
It's a private church-related school here in our community.
What's it do?
We are a school that provides education kindergarten through 12th grade.
All right, Catherine, tell me about Debbie and your interest here with her.
Well, Debbie has been on the committee for the Sun and Sheen Festival. Did I pronounce that right, Debbie?
Sun and Shine.
Sun and Shine Festival, which is a green festival that Hohenwald started several years ago. And the steering committee is a group of very talented people. You see it in places in towns in Tennessee. I always call them the community wizards. You know, they're people who, if you follow Debbie around during a day, she's running the school. She's running a restaurant, the Emporium in town. She's doing all these activities. She's just an incredible group of people. And I met them when I went over to speak at the festival this year. And it was through that interaction and with the permaculturalists at the farm that we came up with this idea of doing the five-day business simulation in Hohenwald. And so Debbie has taken a real leadership role in economic development and really bringing the community together to try and talk about and face the issues that we're facing. So one of the reasons I wanted to have her on the show is the hardest thing you've got to face in your community is how do you get everybody talking about this and you know, turning off their TVs and getting into the restaurant or wherever it is and talking about, okay, what are we going to do and how are we going to do it? And it takes incredible people skills. Part of permaculture really is culture. And I think Debbie is one of the most talented people I've seen at trying to get everybody talking and sort of sharing this responsibility in intimate ways.
Well, Debbie, how has it worked for you then in the community?
Well, we're just in the beginning stages. And, of course, you know, a lot of the need is what's forced us to have to talk about probably subjects that we wouldn't have talked about 5 or 6 years ago.
You find people are receptive to that?
Oh, sure. You know, we're at a place where we are looking at our local community, and we've got to love our community. We've got to – no one else is going to do it for us. And so as we see our small community, and we lost a lot of industry back 10 to 12 years ago, and then we drive down the main streets and we see empty buildings, and, well, somebody's got to do something. And so when you start just putting that out there, people are drawn to that.
How has your community, Debbie, reacted to this latest financial crunch?
Well, of course, there's the worries, there's all those different things. I remember back in about 85 or maybe 84, we had a run on one of the local banks here, and of course, people still remember that, and people were lined up out, you know, down the sidewalks waiting to get money out, and just wondering if that's the place that we're at again.
All right. Well, good luck, Debbie, and let's hope that most community people like you continue to excel. How many people do we need, Catherine, like Debbie, in order to make this successful?
Well, I'd almost turn to Debbie on that, but I think you, within a community, you have, important areas. You've got education, you've got government, you've got banking and finance, you've got enforcement, you've got the church leadership, you know, say you've got about 20 different areas, George, And you've also got a different crosscut because you've got the older generation that's got the knowledge and the wisdom. Then you've got Debbie's generation, which are the people who are really running everything. And then you've got the young people. And so part of it is getting the alignments between the different areas. So if you can get a group of people together who represent the different generations and the different knowledge, that's when you start to get a critical mass that, you know, things don't change and don't change and don't change, but then enough of that critical mass comes together. And that's part of what we're trying to do starting next week in Hohenwald. We've got a 5-day simulation, and we've got the local business leadership who've been gathered with the help of Debbie and her colleagues, the permaculturalists that have come together with Albert and many of the people over at the farm, and then I'm bringing a financial team. And we've got 3 different generations, people from all over the country, and we've got experts in a couple of critical areas. One is green incubation, one is ethanol, one is natural home building, and one is the farm cooperatives. It's a, you know, beautiful farmland in that area. And we're coming together, and we're going to say, okay, how could we reinvent this? Because I think Debbie's right. You know, we can't wait for anybody to do this. We've got to do it on our own. And
But it's got to get funded, Catherine.
It's got to get funded. And the first place it's got to get funded is we've got to think enough of the possibility of our community that we stop sending our money to Wall Street and bring it back. Because that's the first underwriting test, George. Is it good enough for our own money? How can we ask other people to finance us when we won't finance ourselves?
Let's go to Roland in Boise, Idaho with us. Roland, you're on the air with Catherine Austin Fitz. Go ahead.
Thank you, George, for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Hello, Debbie, and hello, Catherine. I have a response to the last comment you made about taking our money out of the central banks and returning it to the community. I'm a retired person, and I currently have my Social Security check deposited in a correspondent Fed bank. Would it help if I changed that process and had my Social Security check, along with the millions of other Social Security people around this country, deposit their checks in a state bank or a local credit union?
What I would do is I would research and find the best managed local bank or credit union. If you can get a state bank, that's great. Mm-hmm. And I would do everything you could to support them. First, I'd switch your deposits and your direct deposits to them, but I would also talk to them. I would say, what can I do to support you in helping to facilitate, you know, more financial liquidity in this community and building up this community? Because as a retired person, you have a great deal of experience and knowledge that the younger generations don't have. So if we can, in a lot of communities, some of the greatest talent is our local bankers and the bankers at these kinds of smaller institutions. And if they can know that we support them and we are interested in helping them build up the economic development in a place, there's a great deal that can be done.
Could I make one more question?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Yes. Actually 2 questions. One, I'll go off the air to catch this answer. Can you explain the PPT to the people and also how that has ruined the market for the average person? And I believe that started in the Reagan administration. And
let's just take this one, Roland, because we've got people lining up for Catherine. What's PPT?
PPT is the nickname. It's the acronym for the nickname, the Plunge Protection Team, which is the president's working group on financial markets. You know, if you get on the internet, you can read the history of it. But it's essentially a group of coordinating agencies in the government and central bank who have full legal authorization to essentially manage all the financial markets and do it with government money and credit. And so you literally have an 800-pound gorilla that is, as some people, as one of the earlier callers said, George, is pumping the dumping in a market and doing it with the full authority of the government.
Next up, let's go to Bill, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Bill. You're on with Catherine.
Yes, Catherine, you are, in my judgment, one of the real true experts on real money, i.e. gold. What can be done with COMEX In other words, to either put, if there's an offer, have to show up with the metal, willing to trade it at the prices. It's all over the lot, and we know it's a bogus, rigged market.
Well, you know, Bill, that's
not real at all.
That's an excellent question. I'm part of a group called the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, GATA.
Right.
And one of the things we've considered, we've done a lot to try and hold the COMEX's feet to the fire. Right now, as you know, we're in a very unusual situation where the physical market is separating tremendously from the paper market, and we're literally seeing prices related to the COMEX that the physical market can't clear on. And that tension is coming to a head in this month and the next. Where it goes, no one knows. You know, but it certainly is a tremendously tense question, and it comes back to the thing we've talked about before, which is how do all of us build the political leverage we need to do something with the COMEX? And, you know, I hate to say it, it keeps coming back to the same thing. We've got to vote with our money, and we've got to vote with, I mean, we've got to pull our money out of these systems if they're not going to perform in the legitimate fashion.
Next up, John, west of the Rockies, take it away. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Catherine, I have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
I'm 56 years old, and I live in Youngstown, Arizona, but I grew up in Phoenix. I live right next to Sun City. I'm still in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And the banks used to pay 4.75%, 5.75%.
Right.
And when I started doing my own investigation on their payroll, I discovered that even the big bank that's right here right now, a few of them,
mm-hmm.
Can you imagine you have four employees, you do not have a degree, but yet you're given $400,000 a year, plus you're given a $1.1 million bonus.
Wow.
You wouldn't, if you investigated that, you'd find out that what I'm telling you is exactly correct, and also you ask yourself how many federal employees, and I heard that the cheapest, I don't know what you want to call it, but it's just like a bonus was $12,000 for the lowest paid federal worker last year.
I have a hard time believing that, given the way the pay operations work in the federal government. There is no doubt, though, that
private sector, I'd believe it.
if you look at, you know, what we've got are people who are making, you know, $40,000 per household and struggling to pay very significant amount of taxes into a system where you've got the government workers at the federal level getting paid, you know, sort of much higher levels. So, you know, the thing is really out of balance. And, of course, then you go to Wall Street and you've got AIG employees who are spending $2,000 for meals per person at a spa for 5 days, you know, paid for again by not just the American taxpayer, but by this global taxation system. So, you know, poor people all over the world are financing this. So, you know, clearly the system is backwards and upside down, and that's part of the lack of productivity. So, you know, I don't disagree that this isn't really upside down.
Let's go to Eric driving around in California in his truck.
Hi, hey there, George. How you doing? Good to talk to you guys. This is Eric. I'm also a member of the NighthawkZone.com forum. Shout out to those guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
all 10 million of them.
Yeah. I want to ask a question to your esteemed panel. I've been arguing and telling people that the government and the banking industry would be scared to death of if maybe 90 to 100% of the people in the United States became 100% debt-free. Is that true? And if everybody became 100% debt-free, what would happen? What would happen to the banks, the banking industry, the government? How would the government react?
Well, it depends on how you do it, but it certainly makes tremendous sense for everyone who can reduce their debt to do so, and more importantly for us to start to finance each other. I mentioned earlier this website, prosper.com, which is kind of an eBay of individual loans, and I think someone, did you mention georgekiva.org? Someone did.
I did.
Yeah, and so There are all sorts of vehicles where instead of going through the banking system, we can loan to each other. I told the story in an earlier show about sitting with a group of women here in Tennessee, and one had their money in a bank that was a local bank that had as a correspondent a big New York bank. They were getting about 3% on their money. The one woman had the same bank stock in her 401k. She was getting about 5%. And then the other woman was paying 23% on her credit card to the same bank. So we literally had a bank 1,000 miles away, giving us 4% for our money and then lending it back to one of us for 23%. Well, that's absurd. So the question is, how can we start to circulate among ourselves and where it's expensive, get us out of the middle? And that's the opportunity, but it means we're going to have to start talking about our money, and that's where we've got to come back to our community and say, okay, how do we start to begin to have these conversations and find out how we can get the intermediaries out of the middle?
Let's go to another call before the break. Sean, Dayton, Ohio. Hey, Sean, go ahead.
Hey, it's me.
Yes, sir.
Me, George. George, I was wanted to say, growing up, did not put your treasures in earthly things. And now I can see that a financial collapse, a true financial collapse could happen. I can picture now people disappearing, the rapture. Millions of people disappearing, the whole world comes together for the one world order. I can see it happening in America, panic, people can't show up to their jobs, there have been people gone, loans have gone bad. So I think that we haven't seen nothing yet. But I think it'll be like eat, drink, and be merry right before it all happens. Things will get better, then it's going to hit them all of a sudden. That's what I believe.
You think it's going to be worse, Catherine, than what it is right now?
Well, I see two approaches here in America. And, getting back to Debbie and her colleagues in Hohenwald, George, we're so blessed in this country. We have so many blessings. And while we've been in this bubble, we've forgotten, we've gotten very spoiled. And as political freedoms have evaporated, they've been replaced by customer service. And, we've become babies. We've really become spoiled by the extraordinary servicing of the corporate machine to us as consumers. And so, all change starts with saying, what do we have that's real, and how can I give thanks for it today, and how can we start to build an economy where we lift each other up and support each other as opposed to liquidate our wealth and literally do things, all make money in ways that drive our popsicle index down. So, it starts with being appreciative. And if you're in a place where there's that critical mass of people who understand what's real and appreciate what they have in each other, then you've got something to really begin with. If you're in a place where people are still so focused on consumerism and materialism and not starting with what's real and chasing the bubble, then you've got a real problem, and you're going to have a much harder time adjusting and changing. But it starts with counting your blessings and giving thanks.
You know, it's interesting, Catherine, having been born in Detroit, they used to say that, when Detroit sneezes, the rest of the nation truly gets a cold. And how true it is, as the automobile industry is sick, the rest of the nation is really hurt because of it. So, we need to come up with some innovative cars, hybrids that Albert had, and really get going again. Well, you stay with us, Catherine. We're going to have phone calls for you when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. We'll be right back, so don't touch that dial. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, of course, it'll be our Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. Last week, we had Joshua Warren with us as we talked about ghosts. This week, open lines on Coast to Coast AM. What would happen if the government gave cities based on population huge amounts of money, Catherine, like $1 billion to Detroit, again, based on size? Would it get squandered or would it get used effectively?
Well, it all depends how it would be invested, but it would certainly be used more wisely than – than simply giving it to Wall Street for bailouts. Yes. In other words, we don't need a banking system that behaves this way. We need cities and we need infrastructure, George, that really, you know, again, build up the real economy. So if you give it to cities, you've got a better chance of building up the real economy than if you give it to the banks.
Let's go to the phones. Here we go. Arthur in Modesto, California. Go ahead, Arthur.
Hi. Good morning, George. Good morning, Ms. Fitz. How are you?
Hi, Arthur.
Yeah, Catherine, throughout most of what you said tonight, you seem perplexed at what can we do? What can we do to get the ball rolling, to get you know, these not too good people who are in power? What can we do as a group? The question I had: have you seen the Zeitgeist Addendum? Have you seen that video?
You know, I've been trying to watch it, and I've had trouble getting it to work.
Very close to what we're talking about tonight, Arthur, isn't it?
Very it is, and you've both hit on a number of the themes in that excellent video. One of the fellows asked what would happen if we got rid of all the debt. Well, they answer that question. They reference, among other things, a Federal Reserve document, the Modern Money Mechanics, and it shows, at least the video presentation makes the case that, you know, if you get rid of all of the debt, you get rid of all the money. And
right.
That's the problem. If you
shift the currency issuance over to the Treasury so that it's under the control of, you know, sort of the Congress, you start to really shift this. But how do you get there when clearly the Congress – I mean, if you look at the survey polls on the bailout, Congress flew completely in the face of what their constituents wanted. So the question is, where do you get the leverage? And I think
Here's the leverage, Kat. You have still, and it was from you that I learned when George had you on the last time that, you pointed out that a New York branch of the Federal Reserve lost up to $4 trillion. The point is, you can't trust the current system. That's evident from listening to you. You were part of the system. I mean, you were right next to Daddy George Bush.
Right.
I saw the picture.
So tomorrow...
Here's the thing.
Uh-huh.
If you get a chance to see this video, please do it. I had nothing to do with it, but, you know, one of the things they say is, and George knows about this because I heard him talk with other guests about it, they're suggesting a boycott of Citicorp, J.P. Morgan Chase, and I can't remember the other one, but if you're an employee, quit. If you've got a bank account with them, quit. Do what you say. Put it in a state chartered or a community organization. But there are things
that's absolutely step one. If everybody in America woke up, and we don't need everybody, just 10%, and shifted, because it's not just a boycott, because remember, it's not enough to be against. You've got to be for. So if we started to shift the money out of systems that are behaving in ways like this, but shifted the money more importantly to the leaders, you know, people like Albert and Debbie, but the good local bankers and the good local institutions who are acting with integrity and don't have big derivative portfolios. So if we withdraw from the negative, and that's step one, because I'll tell you tomorrow, if the Federal Reserve Chairman and the Secretary of Treasury woke up and they had to negotiate with 25,000 bank presidents instead of 10, this would be a whole different political dynamic. And that's where you start to get your leverage. After you shift your bank deposits, you start doing your purchases, your donations, your investments. But you do it in a way that the people who shift their money, you know, shift it to things which are sound and growing instead of things which are cuckoo and falling.
Good point. Let's go to Elaine in Fort Myers, Florida. Go ahead, Elaine.
Hi, George. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
Oh, hi. It's kind of a desperate question. I'm 58 years old, and I lost my job last February. I've been unemployed since then, and my unemployment has run out, and I have a 401k, very small one, that was about $11,000, and I lost $600, and I don't even know what I've lost since the last time I called, but I'm even getting worried. Maybe I might even have to live off this or whatever, and I'm wondering whether I should, at this stage of the game, being 58 and unemployed and all the stuff I just said, whether I should just pull it out of the 401k and just put it into my savings account, or what do you think I should do?
Well, just remember, It depends on what you can arrange in terms of unemployment. Even if you can just get part-time employment, every dime makes a difference of anything you can bring to bring your overhead down or just start getting some income up. But just remember, if you do pull it out, it's very, very important to escrow for the taxes that you're going to owe.
Or pay it back eventually. Can't you do it that way, too, as a loan?
Yeah, you can. There's complexity with doing loans, which is why a lot of people don't do them. It's not just as simple as you think. But so I would be careful, and I would do everything to preserve that and try and get the income going. And I just want you to know, I went in the 1990s, I went from a situation where me personally and my company had $1 million a month of overhead, and we were making lots of money and things were fine. And literally, I had to turn around and go down to $2,000 a month, and run complex litigation with that $2,000. So I remember getting my phone turned off and my energy turned off. So I understand an awful lot about your circumstances. So we're just in my prayers.
Let's go to California. Hey, Rich, take it away.
Yeah, hi, both of you. Listen, sure. I love these programs, and I have two suggestions and one question. The first suggestion, George, is there any way you can put these kind of programs on CD and send them to all the members of Congress, the House of Representatives or the Senate, and ask them for their response to that or try to get them as guests to respond to it on your program?
Interesting. Yeah. Let me kick that around with some folks.
Okay, and the second thing is, Michael Savage is planning on starting a third party. He's been talking about it all week. We need a central point of contact for all of us disaffected Democrats, Republicans, independents that are feeling left out of the system so that we can all contact one local place and see what's going on. And can you imagine if we had Michael Savage, his party, whatever it was called, would be called, would send out a message saying, everybody, take your money out of the banks, put them in the credit unions today. And everybody does it. Just where everybody starts to work together as a group all over the country to do this. And then my question is, what would really be the price of gold today if it wasn't being suppressed? Thank you very much.
That's a good question.
Probably $2,200 an ounce.
That's what I was going to say.
That's what they say. I'm not so sure about Michael Savage's party, but he's a little. Some of his views are a little too extreme, even for most people, don't you think?
I don't know much about Michael Savage, so I can't say. But I know you're right on about the gold.
But he's got an audience. East of the Rockies, let's go to Venus in Mississippi. Or are we going to Mississippi on Venus?
No, well, I don't know at this point in time. I've been pulling my hair out with all this fiscal stuff. I think you're both wonderful, by the way, and thank you for pursuing your avenues of bravery, both of you.
Well, thank you.
I don't know. I'm terrified of bank failing, and I don't trust any lending institutions at this point. I don't trust paper currency, and I was wondering if I'm being foolhardy. You can probably tell by the trepidation in my voice that I have been purchasing some Krugerrand.
Uh-huh.
And, my mother keeps saying on the phone every night, hold on to every penny, you're going to need it, and everything.
Uh-huh.
And, frankly, I'm just really about it. My wits end and my nerves are shot. And
well,
I'm wondering if Krugerrands were a good move or not.
Well, we're in a situation where there's no replacement for the law and civilization, and there's no amount of money or assets that can replace community. So what I've done is, because I faced a very similar, just a horrible situation in the 90s, what I've done is I've gone through my entire day-to-day life and my day-to-day purchases and the things I need to operate both personally and for my business. And what I've said is, how can I access these things and arrange these things without being dependent on big companies or systems that I don't trust.
Right.
So I probably bank at the smallest community bank in America, but it's wonderfully run, and it's been wonderfully run for, over 100 years. And whether it's where I get my eggs or where I get my meat or, you know, just everything. I'll tell you right now, one of the best after-tax yields, you know, on a cash and cash equivalent is just simply stockpiling non-perishables. If you look at the price increases we could face from the kind of monetary explosion we're watching, it just makes good financial sense to have plenty of anything that's non-perishable that you use that's important to you, you know, sitting around. So go through all the different aspects of your life and say, how can I stop depending on people or enterprises or organizations that I can't trust, and how can I start depending on people who I really can trust? Because they're there. There are plenty of them there, but we've got to start rebuilding the kind of linkages that our grandparents and great-grandparents had and which can be built again.
A friend of mine told me that a great investment now, this is bizarre, is buying pallets of ammo for guns. No, he's serious. He is saying that the price of ammunition over the last several years, including the metals that are used to make it, have exploded, literally.
That doesn't surprise me. We see it in lots of areas, because I always buy pallets of paper towels and toilet paper. but there's so many things that are very useful to day-to-day living or in situations of uncertain times where the prices are skyrocketing and the after-tax yield on stockpiling them is if you know you and your neighbors are going to use them, is much better than having your money in the bank.
Let's go next to Rhode Island. Hey, Steve, first-time caller. Thanks for calling, Steve.
No, thank you, George, and great show, and your guests as well. The question I really have, George, and the captain as well, is there any, you know, is there organization in place, or is this the beginning of one that would, for example, help a community build a small power generating facility, maybe solar panels, a geothermal, or maybe do co-op buying, you know, and just increase and compound the network and flex its muscles in new and different ways. Is that sort of where this is going?
Well, that's where it needs to go, because, you know, and you need two things. First, you need conversations in communities, and you need to start linking the different expertise, not just within a place, but places need to link together without going through Wall Street or Washington or the financial centers. So part of it is networking that knowledge. And then the second thing is finding ways of shifting our own capital to support those things. Because if we won't support it with our own capital, how can we expect other outside investors to do it? And right now the knowledge and the capital is there, but it's going to require the organization, and part of it is just, you know, we've got to withdraw our time and our money from watching Wall Street and Washington. And if you look at the amount of time we're invested in the campaigns or watching these bailouts, et cetera, we've got to withdraw and say, I've got to invest this time. And it's just what Debbie said. We can't wait for anybody to come along and build it. We've got to do it now while we still have the knowledge and the money to make it happen.
Let's go now. Let's take final calls. Scott in Chico, California. We'll get you to get us going here, Scott.
Hey, I'm glad to finally get through. I've been trying for a long time.
Super.
I've actually been trying ever since you had that Iranian commander Air Force guy.
Oh, the UFO case. Yeah.
Do you know that night when you guys were talking, I pulled up at a quick service restaurant, and it was a clear, windy, cold night, and I looked to the right, and all of a sudden I saw this object coming across the sky, and it had like an ash tail, and I didn't realize what it was until it kept going across. It wouldn't go down like flicking a cigarette, and it got right in front of me, and I could clearly see it was a boulder or an asteroid. I don't know what you call it, but it was so huge I could see the scorch marks on it. It was insane. I don't know why nobody's seen those kind of things, or maybe people don't report them too much. But anyway, getting to the subject, that guy was talking about a third party. I forgot his name, but he was just talking about it. Yep. We've already tried that with Ross Perot, and it sucked big eggs. I mean, I wasted my vote on that one, and we already have the independent party. We already have a lot of parties out there, and it still hasn't changed. And I think it's because we put too much faith in politicians and a few people to run our lives. I mean, we're talking about everything from health care to anything else, and yet you know, I mean, we look at them like super people. And I'm sick and tired of doing that, of putting one person over millions of people thinking that they're going to change their life for the better for us when it's only their self-interest, almost like they're celebrities. In fact, I'm not going to give it out because I don't even have it up, but I bought a domain name to try to put up my own propositions to give back power to the people about our pocketbook and our lives. And I think that's the only way it's really going to change is to do it ourselves and not have so much faith.
That's what you've been saying, Catherine, just as Scott is saying now.
Yeah.
We've got to do it ourselves.
Right. And absolutely.
If we don't, we're in a mess.
I wanted to say a word of defense for our congressional representatives, George.
Yeah.
The reality is that if you look at popular opinion, to date, there is not a political consensus in America for significantly changing the economy to get us to withdraw from dirty money and warfare. I mean, I talked about the multiple personality disorder. Most American voters want to have our cake and eat it too. So the problem is not just upstairs, it's downstairs too. And so part of gathering our power is taking responsibility and saying, you know, I'm going to come clean. And by coming clean and being willing to work with my neighbors and my network to come clean, I can get the power to really change this. Now, in the middle of that, what we have to understand is the message from us to people in Congress has been twofold. One is we don't understand the legal and financial sort of terrorism that they are targeted with if they don't do what the powers that be want, including physical violence. And I know you're familiar with some of the things that can happen to people in leadership if they don't play ball. It's a dangerous game. But the second thing is they don't believe that we will really support them in standing up to private interests and living with the sort of pump and dump aspects of what happens when you do stand up. So if Congress is going to do right by us, we're going to have to support them in ways that we have not yet shown that we will.
That's the biggest problem. Catherine, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you, George. You're the best.
For Kara Scoburn, Dan Galante, Wayne Roberts, Tom Danheiser, Jason King, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.